The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Welcome to another edition of the Federal Football Report here on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. I am the aforementioned Kevin Stanfield. My co-host Claude Jennings is still on a very special assignment, and this is going to be a different type of show because Claude and I actually won't be in the same place at the same time. But we figure that that's not the important thing. The important thing is that we both have an opportunity to share with you our thoughts on the latest effort by the Burgundy and Gold, an effort, by the way, which resulted in a 34-20 loss to the New York Jets. Now, interestingly, I know you've heard all the stats by now. We're going to get to Kirk Cousins and the picks. We're going to get through the defensive woes in a second. Interestingly, I saw some light for the first time at the end of this tunnel. I saw guys developing into pro football players. I saw a couple of guys during the certain times of the game that said, look, we might go down, but we're not going to go down like a chump if I have anything to do with it. I mean, what can you say about the effort of a guy like Rashard Breeland, who single-handedly kept the boys in the game for the first half, gave up a couple of big plays at the end, but look, he went toe-to-toe with one of the top 10 receivers in the league in Brandon Marshall. The long touchdown pass that Brandon Marshall caught on Breeland, that was on an underthrown ball. Breeland didn't know the ball was behind him. Marshall made a great play on the ball, and Breeland was out of position. So I'll give that one, okay, he allowed that one to happen. But he also single-handedly was responsible for a pick, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery. That's one guy, ladies and gentlemen. One guy on your team. So you got to look at that as a positive. Because that's not a matter of skill. That's a matter of desire right now. Because his skill hasn't improved from last week. It's just what changed was his want to. And he came out with some want to. The other one was a fluke on the Jets part, on the block punt. The Jets only had 10 men on the field. I don't know if you all noticed that. They didn't mention it on TV. But the Jets only had 10 men on the field. Rashard Ross scored a touchdown. You know what's interesting? Rashard Ross has scored 2 touchdowns in his NFL career. Both of them have been in New York. You know, he had a big kickoff return against the Giants. And now the block punt recovery in the end zone. So that showed me a little heart right there, too. Because once things like that start happening to a team, they see how good it is to them, they start to develop a reputation. Hey, we blocked the punt. Hey, we recovered. You know, it's known around the league. And football players talk to each other. They know what's happening. They know who has the reputation of having the good special teams and having the bad special teams. So I looked at both of those as positives. And I wanted to start out with the positives from this game because it's easy when you're in a position like this, when you're talking about this team, to just dwell on the negatives. And first of all, we're not dwelling on them. We're giving you our honest analysis. That's what this is, honest analysis, because we don't have an agenda. We're not paid by the teams. We're not paid by the league. We're just here of our own volition to give you the truth. We are unfettered, so to speak. Now, let's get to Captain Kirk. Apparently, the New York Jets realized after studying the film, the way to beat this football team is to stack 8 in the box, stop Alfred Morris, stop Matt Jones, and defy Captain Kirk to beat you. It's sort of a gamble because Kirk has hit some plays in the past. The problem is it was an effective strategy today. Alfred Morris had 11 carries for 21 yards. You can't really blame Al. You can't really blame the offensive line because you had 5, counting the tight end, 6 guys trying to block 8. The only way to beat a situation like that when the defense dares you to beat them by throwing is to beat them by throwing. Whether it's deep, whether it's slants, whether it's hooks, you got to beat them by throwing. Now, the Jets have arguably one of the best corner tandems in the league in Cromartie and Revis. But the thing is, that's only 2 guys. And they did not beat the Burgundy and Gold by just playing straight up man coverage. They mixed up the coverage. They mixed the man. They mixed man look zones. They had cover fours. They had cover threes. The pick by Rivas, the first pick, was a brilliant defense because Kirk looked at the guy covering the outside receiver, thought when receiver cut outside that he had beaten his man, but he did not see Rivas dropping to the outside coverage. That's why the ball was intercepted. Kirk misread the defense, which is so ironic because that's what all these pundits were saying about RG3. He couldn't read NFL defenses. He can't read NFL defenses. I think the problem is Kirk can read them. He just reads them wrong. Now, here on the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com, we will differentiate between opinion and fact. When it's our opinion, we'll tell you that it's our opinion. When it's fact, we'll tell you it's cold, hard fact. Cold, hard fact, they lost this game. Cold, hard fact, before they started this game, they were only one game out of first place. That's all. Just one game. In a season where the NFC East has been devastated by injuries, they were still in it. They were actually still in the game. So some key coaching moves on the part of this coaching staff could result in a shot at winning this division. Now, this is an opinion on my part. I just believe that Jay Gruden feels so strongly in his heart one of two things. He is so pro-Kirk, or he is so anti-Robert that he will sacrifice this season just to prove a point. I mean, it's obvious. Because Kirk Cousins is what he is. You know what Kirk Cousins is. He's not a bad guy. He seems pleasant enough to the media and I'm sure to the fans if they have an opportunity to encounter him. But Kirk Cousins is not striking fear in the hearts of NFL defenses, ladies and gentlemen. He is what he is. With a wide open opportunity, Kirk will hit the open guy. And we thought in the Philadelphia game that the curse was broken and the legend of Captain Kirk had begun. Winning the game with a last second touchdown pass. Unfortunately, that is the stuff that movies are made of. And we don't have Steven Spielberg directing this team right now. But we'll talk about that in just a bit. Let's take a quick look at the stats. Captain Kirk was 25 of 43 for 196 yards, a touchdown, and two interceptions. His opponent, Ryan Fitzpatrick, was 19 of 26 for 253 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. The real tale of the tape was in the running game because Chris Ivory scorched the Burgundy and Gold for 146 yards on 20 attempts. The longest was a 54-yarder that he barely got brushed out of bounds on. On the Burgundy and Gold side of the ball, I say Al only had 21 yards and 11 carries with eight in the box. Chris Thompson had 12 yards on five carries. Looking at the receivers, Chris Thompson led the Burgundy and Gold with six. Pierre Garçon had five. Jameson Crowder had four. Carrier had four. Ryan Grant had two. Smattering of guys with one. The ball was spread around, but the longest the longest reception was 20 yards by Carrier, the tight end. And he's certainly not a speed demon, ladies and gentlemen. He's a blocking tight end who was forced into duty as the primary tight end by injuries to Jordan Reed and Niles Paul. You know, I'm not going to get into a bash the coach session here. There's plenty of time for me to do that later in the Federal Football Report. I just think there's got to be a change. And to me, the biggest change, the most long overdue change, the change this city is clamoring for, I really, really believe that we got to go back to the burgundy pants and the white jerseys at home. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. The look with the burgundy helmet makes them look like they all just have really big heads. And with the yellow pants, it doesn't even match, you know? There's no correlation there. If you're going to go with the yellow pants, we got to go back to the old days with the big R on the side of the helmet, which actually was very politically correct. Didn't offend anybody by having that R there. But that's another story. So there's much more to come on the Federal Football Report. We'll hear from Claude Jennings on special assignment. We'll hear from Burgundy and Gold head coach Jay Gruden. We got some locker room cuts for you and much, much more. Stay right where you are. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM online at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings in studio. After another Redskins loss, they lose to the New York Jets 34-20 on the road in New York. The Skins now 2-4 on the season. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll take a look at the rest of the NFC East. Dallas trying to figure out what in the world they're going to do at quarterback to try to ensure that they won't lose every single game that they play without Tony Romo and Dez Bryant. And so we'll take a look at the Cowboys. They won't want to buy this week. Monday Night Football features a matchup between the Giants and the Eagles, two NFC East opponents. So we'll take a look at that and its implications for the Redskins. The Redskins' next game next Sunday at home, 1 p.m. kickoff against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll take a look at that a little later on in the program. And also later in this segment, we'll take a look around the NFL. Some real funny calls. And so we'll take a look at that. We'll play some highlights and all kinds of stuff. And maybe we'll even find some cheesy highlight music to play during our trip around the NFL looking at highlights. So again, yeah, the Redskins lose yesterday 34-20 on the road to the New York Jets. Again, 2-4 on the season. Look, here's the thing about the game. I understand that the Redskins were up 13-10 at halftime. And so I'm hearing so much analysis about we've got to be a better second half team. The coaching staff doesn't make adjustments, you know, all this other kind of stuff. And while that's true, for some of the games we saw earlier this season, I think that's true about Miami. I think that that's true about Atlanta. I think that was a bad loss. I don't think that's the case in this game. And here's the reason why I say this. Yeah, the Skins were up 13-10, but that was all because of sloppy play by the Jets. You know, three turnovers in the first half. Now, listen, no disrespect, right, to Breshad Breeland, who made all three turnovers. You know, you applaud him. You pat him on the back because, you know, somebody's got to make the play. It's never this one blanket statement. It's never black and white. It's never, oh, you guys were sloppy. No credit to the defense or all credit to the defense. The offense wasn't sloppy. Both parties played a hand in it. You know, Breshad Breeland made plays that were there and the Jets played sloppy. But you've got to look at it from a standpoint that at no point in the game were the Redskins in control. I mean, I'm looking at the game in the first half, and yeah, they were up 13-10 at halftime, but there was not a point in the game where the Redskins were in control of it. This was not a half where the defense for the Redskins imposed its will on the Jets. The Jets played sloppy. I mean, that was clear. If anyone could look at that game and say the Redskins were imposing their will on the Jets, you know, I'm not sure what you're watching. You're not watching the game that I saw yesterday. I saw some good plays from Breshad Breeland. I saw some turnovers, but I also saw three turnovers only resulting in a total of 13 points at the halftime. You cannot have three turnovers go your way and only capitalize getting 13 points in one half. You've got to put the ball in the end zone. And again, this wasn't a case where you look at the Redskins defense or the Redskins in general in this first half and you saw a team that was just totally better than the Jets, a team that's just imposing its will, a team that's just exercising great strength and power and skill and agility, showing that they're just on a totally different level than the team that they're playing. That's not what happened here. I didn't even see a close game where small adjustments would make the difference. You know what I mean? Where the score is 13-10, that's a close game. And so an adjustment here, an adjustment there, a break here would really, you know, decide this game. I didn't even see that. I saw the Jets, who looked like a better team in the first half, even though they were down 13-10 at halftime. I saw a team, the Jets, who looked like a better team, play sloppy. They went to halftime, got their act together, had a better half, and then blew the doors off the Redskins. That's what I saw. If there were any halftime adjustments that needed to be made, it was the coaching staff saying, look, we've lucked out in this first half. This team played super sloppy, and we're up by 3 points. But don't think that we, you know, played our way into a 13-10 lead against the Jets. Did not. The Jets were sloppy. And so I'm hearing all this talk about, you know, oh, second half adjustments, we got to learn to adjust, blah, 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 blah. Nonsense. Nonsense. At no point in that first half were the Redskins in control of that game. The defense was not imposing its superior power. it just wasn't happening. And you can look at the numbers, and the numbers will tell you. There was no imposing their will on that, on the Jets. Not at all. The Jets played sloppy, and that's what happened. Still no running game. Look at the stats. Alfred Morris, 11 carries, 21 yards. Chris Thompson, 5 carries, 12 yards. How does that happen? How does a team like the Redskins, and we talk about this every week, Kevin and myself, when we have segments together. We talk about this all the time when we're together. This team's strength is clearly, on offense, is clearly running the ball. Clearly is running the ball. Yet repeatedly, they refuse to run the ball. Now, here's the thing. I understand that by the time we got to late in the third quarter, that this game was out of hand and you had to pass the ball. But at halftime, it's 13-10. Even at 17-13, this game is still in hand. Even at 24-13, this game is still in hand. Within reach to where you don't have to abandon the run. The Jets didn't abandon the run. They were 13-10. They didn't abandon the run. Chris Ivory was key to the comeback. 20 carries, 146 yards for Chris Ivory, one touchdown. That's a team not abandoning the run. Not just 20 carries isn't enough. Zach Stacy, 13 carries, 46 yards. The Jets ran the ball a total of 33 times. Now, again, I understand they were up late, but the Skins weren't blown out for much of the third quarter. Got out of hand late. Fourth quarter, it was out of hand. Then you want to throw to try to get get back in this game. But it wasn't out of hand. There was no reason for Alfred Morris to just get 11 carries. There was no reason for the Redskins' backs to have a total of 16 carries. Doesn't make sense. And then we get to the quarterback play. And look, on the Federal Football Report, Kevin Stanfield's been tougher on Kirk than I've been. And I understand why. You know, look, when you want to see RG3 in and you believe he gives you the best chance to win, and I can understand why one would feel that way. You know, they put Kirk Cousins in, and so you start to criticize everything Kirk does. Look, people who want Kirk Cousins in or Colt McCoy, you know, when RG3's in the game, they criticize everything RG3 does. But the truth of the matter is they're all kind of the same right now. I think I said this 2 weeks ago. I haven't seen Kirk Cousins do anything or not do anything that RG3 would do or would not do, other than take a couple sacks. I mean, other than that, and hold the ball too long. And is that really the only difference between these two? That RG3 would just take more. Look, he's liked better by the coaches and by what most reports say by many in the locker room, and that he will take more sacks than Kirk Cousins. Kirk will get the ball out of his hands more. But does it translate into wins? That's the big question. And so when you look at the quarterback play, especially from today, it doesn't translate into wins. Look at it all season long. It doesn't translate into wins. There's not a bone in my body that does not believe that after six games this season that RG3 couldn't be 2-4. I mean, are we really arguing about which quarterback should play in the team's 2-4? Is the argument really between Kirk Cousins and RG3 who's the better 2-4 quarterback? Who'd we rather have? Is it very possible that in a draft where we traded away players for RG3 and then two rounds later in the same draft get another quarterback? I've got to figure out how many wasted picks that equals up to be. I'll look it up. But to waste multiple picks and then have two quarterbacks, and years later, and the team still not know if either one of these guys are the guy for the future, that could be one of the biggest colossal wastes of a draft ever. Because of the multiplicity of the picks, you trade away multiple picks to get RG3, then in the same draft, in the third round, as opposed to drafting something else you need, like an offensive line, maybe some secondary help. I mean, there's tons of needs here, right? As opposed to doing that, you get another quarterback. And from day one, well, maybe not day one, there was the playoff run. But there were tons of talk after that as far as who should be the starter. So it does nothing but bring controversy. And then years later, you're still not sure which one of the two should be the quarterback. And the sad thing is, who knows if there's, at the end of the day, any difference between the two at all. Like, their methods are different. You know how the methods are different, but at the end of the day, you're still disappointed because neither one can get the win? And we could talk all we want to about that playoff run. The playoff run was under different circumstances. Number one, they got in because Dallas lost. So that's number one. Dallas failed towards the – they did the typical Dallas December thing, and then they lost their way out of it. The Redskins won and got back in, number one. Number two, the offense that they were running for RG3 where they had so much success was the one that was getting them all broke up, right? Kyle Shanahan, who later was vilified by, for the most part, by RG3 and his people, right, including fans, saying, you know, look, you're going to get this guy killed. You got to protect him. You got to keep him in the pocket. He's got to – and say, look, he can't play this way, right? And so they want to switch the offense up. Well, the success went as well. You take that offense away because you want to protect him. You find out he can't play in the typical offense, right? So anyway, the point is, give away these draft picks, get Kirk Cousins. Years later, still don't know who the quarterback is. And the problem is there may be no difference between the two, and they both could be bad. I don't mean to sound with the doom and gloom. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. Redskins lose 34-20 on the road to the New York Jets. Washington falls 2-4 on the season. Again, after a pretty bad loss. They play Tampa Bay next week. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers 2-3. Again, that's going to be a home game for the Washington Redskins, 1 p.m. kickoff. And look, there are these games where you say, hey, this is where we can get some things right. And I think the Bucs present that for the Redskins. But at the same time, Skins may have this game circled on their calendars as a get-right game. The Bucs very possibly could have this game circled on their calendar as a get-right game. Look, the game plan is the same game plan every week. Run the ball. That's the game plan. Run the ball against Tampa Bay. I think you've got a quarterback in Jameis Winston who's young, who you can rattle, shake him up a little bit. You definitely can get some turnovers. And so I think the defense should be, despite injuries, should still look strong against Tampa Bay. They can run the ball. Doug Martin's a beast. And so you'll have to be on your A game with the run. But it's not a task, Tampa Bay, you know, that I think is something that's, you know, something that the Redskins can't do or should even find hard to do. This is but the Bucs are coming off a bye week. They'll be prepared. The defense, I'm not even totally too worried about against Tampa Bay. I'm worried about the offense. And the one thing I'm worried about is, are they going to run the ball? They didn't even have 20 rushing attempts between two backs yesterday. Got to run the ball. Look, elsewhere, let's get off this. Let's take a look around the league, right? Elsewhere in the NFC East. So the Giants and Philadelphia Eagles, they played tonight. The Giants 3-2. They got on a roll after starting the season 0-2. Won three straight. The Eagles off to a rocky start to start the season, but they picked up two wins. They're 2-3. So this is a pretty important game for both teams. The Eagles win. They pulled a 3-3, and the Giants dropped a 3-3, and that will put the Redskins actually in sole possession, I guess, of last place in the NFC East. So a big game tonight for the NFC East because, look, lurking right there is still Dallas, who, by the way, is trying to find a way to not lose every single game that they play with Tony Romo and Dez Bryant out. They start out 2-0. And then Romo goes out, and they can't win a game. They dropped three straight. They were on a bye this week. Next Sunday, they play against the Giants in New York. Now, you remember, New York had them dead to rights. Dallas could actually be a 1-4 team if it wasn't for that last drive with Tony Romo hitting Jason Witten for that touchdown. And so the Cowboys 2-3, they're going to start Matt Castle. They gave up on Brandon Whedon like the Browns did years ago. And so they'll get – and also they're actually making a change at running back. Apparently, Joseph Randle's not the answer to DeMarco Murray leaving. So they've got apparently Kristen Michael's going to get more carries, the former Seattle Seahawk. And they've got a guy, Rod Smith, who used to play for Seattle. They just picked him up last week. And so they got a couple of Seattle Seahawks running backs that they're going to try. And so we'll see. And we'll see where Dan McFadden fits in that equation. Look, they got Greg Hardy back, and so they feel like the defense actually played pretty well against New England. It's just that you can't keep that up if your offense is not going to score and convert third downs. I mean, if you're going to stay on the field, obviously that defense is going to get worn out. And so we'll see the Giants play the Cowboys next week, Philadelphia and the Giants tonight on Monday Night Football. So now, before we close out this segment, let's just take a look around the NFL. Let's try to get some of that cheesy highlight reel music. We don't have to be cheesy. Let's just get some highlight reel music. as we do that. There we go. All right, here it is. So look, Steelers upset Arizona 25-13. Landry Jones, by the way, in for Mike Vick, who went out yesterday with a hamstring injury. Mike Vick, by the way, who was in for an injured Ben Roethlisberger. Landry Jones goes 8-4-12, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns. The Steelers and the Cardinals both now 4-2 on the year. Minnesota improves to 3-2 after a 16-10 win over the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are now 1-5. Cincinnati remains unbeaten, 6-0 after the 34-21 win over Buffalo. The Bills are now 3-3. It took overtime, but the Lions beat the Bears for their first win of the season, 37-34. No one cares about the final score, actually, because, look, we're talking about the Lions who are 1-5 and the Bears who are 2-4. But everybody's talking about this wacky play.
Stafford, end zone. The ball is juggled, and the Bears come up with it. An interception by Jonathan Anderson. Looked like a touchdown, but not held on to by Tate. And it's ruled a pick for Chicago. Tate thinks otherwise.
Reviewing the play, the rule on the field has changed. It is a
touchdown. Now I'm really confused.
That's the play.
You know, to be honest with you, I don't understand what all the controversy is about. Look, if they say you have to make a catch, and you get the catch, you have to secure it and make a football move, that's exactly what he did. So I don't see what all the controversy is about. But anyway, again, no one cares about that game. The Lions are 1-5. The Bears 2-4. Broncos remain undefeated, 6-0. They beat the Browns 26-23. Texans 31, Jaguars 20, Dolphins 38, Titans 10. A couple games no one really cares about one way or the other. Carolina down 23-14 in the fourth quarter to Seattle. They pull within 3 points after Jonathan Stewart 1-yard touchdown run. They missed the extra point, so it's Seattle 23-20, under a minute to go, and then Cam Newton.
Play clock winding down. They get to play off. Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown! How about that? Another 80-yard touchdown drive. 4 of them in the game for Carolina.
So after that touchdown, Carolina remains undefeated, 6-0 on the year. Seattle falls to 2-4. Also undefeated, the Green Bay Packers, they're 6-0 after beating the Chargers, who are now 2-4. The final score, 27-20. Career day for Phillip Rivers. Check this out. 43 of 65 passing. He passed the ball 65 times. 43 completions. 503 yards, 2 touchdowns. But at the end, he needed one more completion to try to tie the game up and send it into overtime. But it was Green Bay's defense with the goal line stand that won the game.
The right side. Here's Rivers. Rivers throws, and it's knocked down, incomplete by Randall. And the Packers are going to survive San Diego's best punch.
And in other news, the 49ers beat the Ravens 25-20. Patriots still undefeated after beating the Colts in the AFC Championship rematch, where Deflategate all started. Everyone did their due diligence yesterday, though. All the balls were checked. They were all inflated into the proper range, proper levels, and the Patriots still won 34-27. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. The Redskins lose 34-20 on the road to the New York Jets. Kevin Stanfield's coming back up with the final segment. Stay close.
And now back to Claude and Kevin and the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. You know, they aren't half bad for a couple of old guys.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. As promised, we're going to take you into the locker room after the Burgundy and Gold fell to the New York Jets 34-20 to hear some sound, first of all, from quarterback Kirk Cousins, and then later on, some special inside baseball, or inside football in this case, with the head coach, Jay Gruden. But right now, post-game, Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, the first one, you know, I felt like my options to the right were covered, and I thought to run it. Didn't feel like I had a window to run it. And then, you know, essentially need to throw it away there. Need to just put it in the bleachers and put it over Ryan Grant's head. So, you know, that's something that was disappointing. And then the second one, you know, I felt like we needed a shot play to get back in the game. I felt like we needed to take something and try to put one out there. And you know, obviously didn't like the result. But that was one where, you know, earlier in the game or when you're in the game in a tighter game, you would never force it down the field like that. But the situation, I started to feel like maybe I needed to push it down the field more and see if we could get a spark, get something to get us going.
Kirk, third quarters again. Yeah. You know, it's just been a really bad theme for this team all season.
I don't know what the deal is. I mean, we talked about it the last several weeks. We've gone in at halftime saying, hey, the guys at third quarter's got to be better. We've at halftime been locked in. We've got, you know, plays coming out that we feel good about. You know, we're reiterating it to one another how we have to come out, you know, firing on all cylinders. So it's not for lack of emphasis. It's not for lack of awareness. But for whatever reason, it's not happening, and that's something we need to, you know, improve upon, because if you can't play all four quarters at a high level, you're going to have a hard time winning. But we've shown what we're capable of, and we are firing on all cylinders, and so it's so important not let that third quarter slip.
Kirk, you talked about moving past making bad decisions and, you know, being easier on yourself on not feeling like you've had to do too much. And you said that you wanted to take the shot play downfield, but and it's easy to look back at it, but you know, those types of decisions, when they come back to bite you, is it frustrating when you feel like you've moved past that, but then it pops up again?
Well, it's a process, but I guess the result ends up kind of like a punt. I mean, the ball's thrown deep. Catch it right where he caught it is where they get the ball. I mean, if we don't complete the pass there, we end up punting it anyways. You know, but I'll definitely go back and watch the film and say, you know, where could I have gone with the football? What could I have done better? And, you know, I certainly don't want to be throwing, you know, interceptions.
We know the guys you're missing on the offensive line, mm-hmm. but what were the reasons the run game just couldn't get on track 30 yards or so?
Yeah, the only thing I can say, I don't have a great answer for you, is just that, you know, when you have to get away from the run game in the second half, when you get down by a few scores and you run out of time, it's, you know, impossible to put up good numbers. But prior to that point, I really don't know. You know, it's a combination of everybody's got to be working together, all 11 guys, and, you know, for whatever reason, it hasn't happened at the level we want it to. But, you know, when you can't run the ball late in the game, it certainly takes away from your ability to show off a good, strong running game.
Yeah, Jay, you know, expressed confidence in you again here, right, a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
But are you starting to get concerned that, you know, multiple interception games can't go on forever about, right. At least I'm thinking about right. Replacing.
Yeah, you can't doubt. I mean, if I start to doubt, then I'm not going to ever be able to get to the level I want to go. So I just got to keep going, learn from mistakes. The key is to identify, you know, what's the issue and get it corrected. You know, the more I play, the more I'll learn. But no, if I start to question or doubt, you know, we might as well just throw in the towel. You know, so I gotta stay positive and keep working and keep believing.
Okay, that might have been a little bit unfair on my part, teasing Captain Kirk on his never say die attitude. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. It seems to me that Kirk could have been a little bit more contrite about this. It's like, I'm not saying the loss didn't hurt him and he didn't care, but he wasn't that broken up about it. Kirk Cousins would have got a lot more respect to me if he had come out and said, you know what, I stunk the joint up today. I was in a position I don't care how many points they were ahead. I was in a position that I could have led this team to victory, and I didn't get it done. I got to work harder. These guys depending on me, and we're going to get it done, ladies and gentlemen. If I got to stay in the film room all night, if I got to, like, lose sleep, if I got to, like, not eat, whatever it takes, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to win. Then he should have gone out and found the biggest guy on the team and just slapped him. Exert his dominance. Okay, there might be a stretch. But Kurt is a little bit too complacent to me. I think that the fact that Robert was still number three, Kurt doesn't have anything to worry about. Not a thing. Kurt's not looking over his shoulder at Colt McCoy. Kurt really, really, really has to be bad before he gets yanked. It's a little confusing to me because I listened to a couple of other programs just to make sure I didn't miss anything on the way over here. And There are people who are hitting around. I mean, these are guys who are bashing Robert Griffin III. They're guys who are hitting around the quarterback change is in the offing. And as much as I love RG3 and as much as I feel that he should be starting a quarterback for the Burgundy and Gold, I don't think you just change quarterbacks right now just to be changing them. The reason for a quarterback change would be because you feel you got a shot in this division. You have strategic planning opportunity here that you don't want to let slip by. And you feel that changing the quarterback is the way to make this happen. I would think that's the reason Kirk Cousins is starting anyway. Because the powers that be in this organization in terms of making the on-field football moves think that Kirk knows what he's doing and Robert doesn't. That Kirk is picking up what they're trying to do and Robert isn't. That Kirk can lead this team to victory and Robert can't. Now, whatever reason they made this decision, they've made it. It must have been something in practice. Maybe the guy had a dream or something. But that's the decision. That decision is made. So don't come to me and say it's time to pull Kirk Cousins because he's not getting it done. This is the proverbial, you made your bed, now sleep in it. This is the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. Kevin Stanfield ranting right now. Now, Kirk gave us some interesting bites in his post-game presser, but I can say the same thing about head man Jay Gruden, because it was obvious to me that the members of the media who were questioning him thought that Kirk stunk the joint up, and they were wondering why he didn't make a change or did he think about making a change. And Gruden, as intelligent as he is, pretended like he didn't know what they were asking him. So without further ado, let's go to post-game press sound with Washington head football coach Jay Gruden.
Obviously, you were missing a lot of key guys today, but with a couple more turnovers, throwing behind some guys, how much longer can you live with the multiple turnovers, interceptions per game?
Yeah, we'll have to look at the film. But, I like to see what happens when we get our full cast of characters back. But, you know, there's some opportunities there for Kirk to make some plays, and I think he missed some throws. He threw an interception that obviously was a tough throw. But we have spent a lot of time, invested a lot of time this season in Kirk, and we'd like to see the film and before we move forward with any kind of crazy decisions. But we stand behind Kirk and see what happens next week against Tampa.
There's been a lot of talk that Kirk has moved past the bad interception, so to speak, the better decision-making. Is it frustrating when you see a play like the one on the Revis interception still pop up?
Yeah, every once in a while. I mean, that was a tough play. It was tough. You know, he looked to the right side initially, and they clamped it down. It was just a basic stick route on with our number two and number three receiver, and I think they both recovered, or he couldn't see him one or the other. I'll check the film out, and he came back late. That's tough, but you know, he's not the only quarterback in history that's made a poor decision or a poor throw. And he won't be the last time he does it. You know, he's a young quarterback, and he'll learn from it, and we all will.
Coach, you mentioned just a moment ago it's that Kirk missed some things today, passes off target, things like that. When you look at it, are those mechanical issues? Or is he getting too much pressure?
I don't know. I have to look at the film. You know, like I said, also a little windy. You know, a lot of pressure on him, you know, really. There's a lot of things going on pre-snap that he's got to deal with, getting the formations, the protections, and all that. You know, last week the Jets had about 15 cover zeros against Miami, so, you know, we're always looking out for those and making sure he's aware of those. And they played pretty vanilla today, and, you know, I think he hurried in some throws he didn't have to, or maybe he did, but I'll have to look at the film. But overall, you know, you hate to pin this game on Kirk. You know, I know he could have played better, but we had no running game whatsoever. And Kirk's not in a stage in his career right now, nor is anybody on our roster to carry our team throwing the ball as much as we would have had to today.
I know you just said that you want to look at the film and you stand behind him. Is he your quarterback for the rest of the season?
Yeah, that's the intent.
Let me translate the whole press conference for you. Media. Coach, Kirk stunk the joint up. Coach Gruden. No, he didn't. This is the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Kevin Stanfield, not along with Claude Jennings, who will be here shortly. I don't know. Is this denial or what? Or is this just a man backing his guy? If Kurt, you got to love that. You know, the coach got your back. He has your back to a fault. And that's what we had here was a fault.
This is the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and thefederalnewsradio.com. Now for the inside football that I promised you. That was the standard press conference. But people don't know that I had an opportunity to speak with Coach Gruden after the game about some extracurricular activities that Kirk Cousins may be involved with. Here's that audio. Coach, I understand that Kirk has signed a deal with Hollywood to do a biopic about being the quarterback of the Washington Redskins. Do you think this can be a distraction to Kirk as he moves forward as the starting quarterback?
We have spent a lot of time, invested a lot of time this season in Kirk, and we'd like to see the film and before we move forward with any kind of crazy decisions.
I understand you wanted a lot of his teammates to participate, but due to injuries and other situations, they couldn't participate in the filming of this movie. Do you think Kirk could be a good movie director without the supporting cast around him?
Yeah, we'll have to look at the film. But, you know, I'd like to see what happens when we get our full cast of characters back.
Well, Coach, what about other forms of entertainment? For instance, do you think Kirk Cousins has what it takes to be successful on Broadway?
You know, there are some opportunities there for Kirk to make some plays.
Yeah, folks, there's a lot of stuff happening in the world of the Burgundy and Gold that most people don't know anything about. Okay, let's go back to the traditional press conference. One thing I noticed about what he was saying about Kirk is that they couldn't get the running game going. Seemed like he kind of threw the running game under the bus. Again, the reason they couldn't run the ball is because the Jets had eight in the box. They dared Kirk to beat them in the air. Kirk couldn't do it. None of the receivers are striking fear in the hearts of the Jets' defense. Guys aren't getting open, which is a mystery to me. Pierre Garçon is big enough and strong enough to be able to get open. He got open for the touchdown pass. Is it he's not getting the ball in the right place at the right time? Little Jamison Crowder, rookie, he's getting open, but he's getting open in space. He can't really do anything unless he has open space to deal with. They're containing him, and he's so easy to bring down because he's so small. The flanker screens, teams have gotten the film on that. They know it's coming. It's time for some innovation in the offense. The teams know what's coming. That's why they haven't been able to produce in the third quarter because the book on the Burgundy and Gold is very limited. Once teams see what they're doing in the first half, they make the second half adjustments, and they just shut the Burgundy and Gold down in the third quarter. Transversely, the same thing is happening on the defense. Teams are looking at the defense. They're looking at what they did in the first half. They're making halftime adjustments and having no difficulty in doing whatever it is they want to do. It seems like the Burgundy and Gold is an easy study, which leads me into this rant. I think the 3-4 experiment is a complete failure. Total failure. Gotta go. Can't do it. Won't work. We've had no success with the 3-4 defense. The reason they installed the 3-4 in the first place is because someone said this. They said, you can generate more turnovers with a 3-4. Who says? How can they prove that? How can they say that you can generate more turnovers? Well, I guess if you got Lawrence Taylor coming off the edge or Ray Lewis in the middle, or maybe Hokey Nada bringing pressure up the front. But just to say that the defense in itself as a scheme creates more turnovers, that's hogwash. Poppycock. That's two words I've never used before in my life, I don't think. Anyway, they don't have the break. This team does not have the personnel to run an adequate 3-4 defense. They just don't have it. They don't have the push from the nose tackle. They don't have the speed from the outside linebackers. They don't have the aggressiveness from the inside linebackers. And they don't have a secondary that can maintain man coverage long enough for the front seven to be effective. It's a package deal. Without pass rush, the secondary is victim. Without secondary that can man cover or disguise their themes, the pass rush is moot because the quarterback can buy time. So right now you're looking at this 3-4 defense as it exists right now. It just can't work. But I'm concerned. I don't know if they have the personnel to go back to a traditional 4-3. It seems like they do the way they shuttle people in and out. Maybe Hatcher and Chris Baker could be defensive tackles on a 4-3. With Kerrigan and Trent Murphy as outside linebackers. Keenan Robinson, I think, would be an effective middle linebacker in the 4-3 defense. I think he's forced into too many cover situations as one of the inside linebackers in the 3-4. I just don't like it. I didn't like the move from the beginning. I was forced to live with it. But right now, it might be time for a change. I mean, it's no problem to have a quarterback controversy. You can look at the quarterback play and say whether you want this guy or that guy. But I think we should have a defensive controversy. Go up in arms. We got to get rid of this 3-4 defense. That's all there is to it. It just ain't happening. This is the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. And before we finish this segment off, I got to make mention of the head coach of the New York Jets, Todd Bowles. Now, as most of you know, Todd Bowles, former member of the Burgundy and Gold, had a Super Bowl ring, was the starting safety in Super Bowl 22. And I was very happy to see what Fox did. They gave a little insight onto the relationship between the quarterback, the MVP of that Super Bowl, Doug Williams, and Todd Bowles. He said that Doug Williams said, he told Fox that, you know, because Doug was the second-string quarterback for a lot of that year. He ran the scout teams when Jay Schrader was the starting quarterback. And so he had to go up against Todd in practice. And he said the thing he noticed most about Todd Bowles was his knack for putting everybody else on the field in the right position. And Doug had to go up against this, so he had to go up against Todd, and it really, really impressed him. So when Doug, after his playing career was over and he got into coaching, approached Todd Bowles to be his defensive coordinator at Morehouse State, defensive coordinator, defensive backs coach, one or the other. And Todd had no coaching experience. And Doug just said, hey, look, you know the game of football. You'll be great at this. And long story short, he went from there. He had some defensive coordinator jobs and defensive backs jobs with Philly. He was a personnel guy with the Packers for a while. And ended up last year as a defensive coordinator for the past 2 years, I believe, with the Arizona Cardinals. And there was no doubt in anybody's mind that this was the next great thing in pro football as far as a head coach goes. The next bright mind, the up-and-comer. Why this organization did not go all out after Todd Bowles to be the head coach of this team is beyond me. That's what you need. You need somebody with some connections to this team, with this community, and the guy who had this reputation from the outside plus from within. And I see nothing but bright things in Todd Bowles' future. Oh, but woulda, coulda, shoulda. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. I certainly hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. So on behalf of Claude Jennings, for the whole Federal Football Report crew, I'm Kevin Stanfield. We'll see you next week with another hard dose of reality right here on the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com.